Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Steph Tolev is one of Canada's funniest exports. Steph first made a name for herself as one half of the sketch comedy duo Lady Stash, along with Allison Hogg. Steph also won the Best Female Stand-Up Award at the Canadian Comedy Awards. And her comedy album, I'm Not Well, was nominated for a Juno Award. For those of you who don't know, the Juno Awards are basically Canada's version of the Grammys. Steph is fearless on stage. So if you ever think that you'll go see her live and heckle her, think again. She is the queen of comedy crowd work. And by her own admission, the queen of filth. She joins us now to talk about never fearing to go over the top. She says that's the kind of brave comedy that always inspired her.
Honestly, a lot was from Kids in the Hall because I watched a lot of Canadian content, a lot of very silly, very... I also watched a lot of Mr. Bean growing up and a lot of British comedy. My grandma was super into Are You Being Served? And Keeping Up Appearances, like those, like, I don't know if you probably do because you're Canadian, but most people probably don't know what I'm talking about. But yeah, Keeping Up Appearances with that woman, Hyacinth, who was like a 65-year-old like nut, and she would be so physical and she'd like roll down hills and stuff. So I think from a young age, I watched a lot of physical stuff.
Yeah, I'm a big Kids in the Hall fan too. And I've been lucky enough to talk to Scott Thompson and Dave Foley. I'm curious to know, do you have a favorite Kids in the Hall sketch?
I know. And it's the first one every time. It's with Scott Thompson, Bruce McCullough, where he has that big piece of lettuce on his lip. And they're in like the meeting and they're trying to be very serious. And then Scott's like, you just got a bit of thing right here and you just can't get that piece of lettuce off. And just it just becomes so insane. That's the exact kind of sketch I like. Physical and over the top silly.
Mm-hmm. I understand you were also influenced by SCTV and also Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
Yes, I just watch a lot of British stuff. I think it was like British and Canadian is where, because in Canada, we see all that stuff. Like, I'm sure in the States, you guys don't get any of this British comedy, but that's all that I watched growing up. Yeah, I like Goofy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when comedy can be so, it's so over the top, it just becomes funnier to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How difficult a transition was it for you to go from sketch comedy to stand-up comedy?
Not very hard. And I started improv and then to sketch, and then I was still kind of doing stand-up during that period. But especially in Canada, you make absolutely $0 doing improv or sketch. So I was like, oh, this isn't paying the bills and I can't be a waitress forever. So I got way more into stand-up and I felt like I was way more comfortable. I think that's a big reason my crowd work does so well. It's because I'm so comfortable on stage talking to people. And like, we already were doing that. Like, Allison and I sketch was very loose. It would never be the same twice. Like, we had the beats that we would hit, but we would like in between, we would riff and like we'd interact with the crowd all the time during sketch. So I think it really helped me become a better stand-up.
Have you noticed a difference between what Canadians and what Americans laugh at?
Not really. I find it now is city-based. So to me, it was a big difference when I moved, but then I realized it was just Los Angeles. So like the West Coast, I find they're much more sensitive and I'm very self-deprecating because I find it funny and it's like, it kind of makes me feel better when I do it.
I'm Canadian, you're welcome. Hey, that's fun. I like to scare all the boys in LA and tell them that this is what every woman from Canada sounds like. Like we've been foraging through the woods our whole lives. I've survived off of only rainwater and bark. It's very hard for me to swallow. Lined with wood chips. It is hard, it is. Or it sounds like I got stuck behind one of those cement trucks and I don't know what that was. That's...
When I first started out here, I would get like, aww, like people like feeling bad for me. But like in Toronto, they'd be dying laughing. Or like the East Coast, they're like, oh, we love this stuff. But for some reason, the West Coast is very hypersensitive when it's like, no, I wouldn't say this out loud. Like I wouldn't make fun of my mustache if I didn't know I had a mustache and knew that my boyfriend knew I had a mustache. You know what I mean? It's a weird thing that people get sensitive over when it's like, it's my face and body, and you know.
Do you have any theories about why West Coast comedy fans are so hypersensitive?
I don't know. I really don't. And even I was just in Vancouver a couple weekends ago and I was like killing. And then I said one thing that is kind of, it wasn't even like anything. It was like an offhanded thing. And they all went dead quiet. And I was like, oh my gosh. And it just was very, I had to like reset the room. And I was like, we're not filming a special out here. You guys are too sensitive. I need somewhere that's losing their minds.
Sure, yeah. How would you describe your comedy?
Filthy, but silly. Somebody this weekend really worded my comedy very well. She's like, you're so gross, but you're so goofy that it makes it not as gross.
I will say, though, I did clean up on Tinder in LA during the pandemic because, ooh, all the hot boys, you got real sad, didn't you? You got real lonely. And you got real desperate. And all the pretty blonde girls didn't swipe right, did they? Guess who did? Old Steffi T crawled out of the well.
I hate when everyone, especially men, are like, female comics have nothing else to talk about. Name, besides Brian Regan and Jerry Seinfeld, another male comedian who's not dirty. I don't know any personally. I've never I do shows every single night. I see dirty men every single night of my life. So it's a very insane thing that people get mad at that over. Also, I am gross. I think like this. It's not like I'm trying to be gross. Like, I'm a very, you know, open person. I'm very, you know, I'm very sexual. I talk about that stuff very openly. And I think people do too, but they just like to say they don't.
Yeah.
Like, I had a nun at one of my shows. Loved it. Came up to me, hugged me, got in the full nun gear. Full photo with me, loved every minute of it. So it's like, I'm not up there, I'm not trying to be gross. I'm not saying anything offensive to anybody else. I'm not making fun of religion. I'm not making fun of race. So it's like, everybody is doing the things I'm doing. I'm just talking about them out loud.
Yeah, very well said. I want to get back to your description of how you describe your comedy, because I've read a quote from you that said, it had a few more words in it, brash, vulgar, self-deprecating, which you've mentioned, physical, silly, and painfully real. And I'm very intrigued about that painfully real part. Can you tell us why you consider some of your comedy to be painfully real?
Well, because it's all real. I every single thing I say on stage has happened to me. These are things that have happened to me, and the amount of people that DM me after shows relating to the stuff I'm talking about and thanking me for being this open about it, that's why I keep doing it. I remember a long time ago, I did a club in Ottawa years ago, and I remember I was being pretty dirty, and the owner was getting mad at me, telling me to stop, and no one finds it funny, even though it was doing well. But then after the show, an older woman came up to me. I think she's probably like in her 70s, and I was like, oh, sorry. She was sorry for what? She goes, you're acting like we haven't been doing exactly what you're saying for the last 45 years. She goes, there's nothing to apologize for. We've already done all these things you're talking about. And that made me feel better, being like, oh yeah, we're all secretly kind of gross. I just think nobody wants to say it out loud. That's all it is. Everyone's acting like they're not. They're putting on this whole facade that they're somebody else, and they're deep down, they're not.
Was that always the way, like, or when you first started stand-up, were you more reluctant to?
Yeah, definitely more reluctant and more, I was more like joke heavy, but now I'm finding it way easier to just be myself on stage and just bluntly tell things that have happened to me. Because anytime I would tell these stories to my friends after they happened, they would die laughing. They're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I don't want this to be real. So I'm like, I have to talk about them. Because people, half the things I say on stage, people are like, yeah, right, they didn't happen. I'm like, it did happen though.
Well, so why do you think, do you have a theory about why these bizarre things happen to you?
I think I have an aura around me. It's been since I was a kid, like strange things would just like, I remember one time I was very young and we were like, I used to Highland dance. I'm sure you know what Scottish dancing is.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't danced my whole life. And we were at this like hotel and like a Days Inn in like, who knows, Elma, Michigan, somewhere bizarre. And I was in the pool and my dad like left me because I could swim by myself fine. I was like 8 or 9. He comes back and this very strange woman is now in the pool with me in like her clothes, telling me that I could be a swimmer. She's like, you got a perfect body to be a swimmer. And she's like helping me swim. And my dad was like, I'm never leaving you alone again. Like what? Like she, it wasn't like sexual, but it was very strange. That's for sure. I have an energy around me where people feel like they can say, like even like my stand-up, if you see any of my crowd work clips, I'm not pulling these things out of people. They're just bluntly saying very personal, very strange things about their life to me in a public way.
Is there conjugal visits?
Oh.
Have you had one yet?
Yeah.
Like, I was in Calgary a couple weeks ago, and a woman yelled out, oh, yeah, my husband cheated on me. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. And she goes, yep, and he's sitting right here. And I was like, huh? And then the whole crowd turned, and we're all like, well, this is interesting. It was just, like, very bizarre. Like, people just like to, I don't know. I think they also want me to roast their husbands, which I did, which I definitely did.
Yeah, you are really good at crowd work. In fact, I think we could go so far as to say you are the queen of comedy crowd work. And you post a lot of it online, which is your right to do because it's hilarious.
Yes. But
I'm wondering if there has been a moment of crowd work that has gone wrong for you.
There's one video that went crazy viral where I had been in another, it was the Comedy Store, and I was in another room. So I missed what happened at the beginning of the show. So I came in And I was talking to this couple and they ended up not being a couple. They were like boss and employee. And then somebody else yelled out, he sponsored the show, Move On, with this tone that was so disgustingly rude for no reason. Like, and I can honestly admit it was the first time I've ever done crowd work where I wasn't being rude. I wasn't being gross. I didn't ask anything inappropriate. I just missed the beginning info because I wasn't in the room. And he was so rude and he left. And I got so pissed. Because I was like, you can't heckle me and leave. Sorry, that's not how this works. You want to heckle me, you stay in the room and you deal with it.
Should I go to the bathroom right now? Should I get an extension cord? Can you imagine? I take a full extension cord to the bathroom. You think I'm done? This isn't over? I've never had some...
And then I convinced the host at the end of the show to bring me back up.
Whatever that first... Whoa. Back in the seat. Did I offend you? Oh, he's leaving again.
And then he ended up being rude to me after texting the guy whose show it was, still making fun of me. I was like, you had your chance.
Mm-hmm.
You had your chance and you wasted it. Sorry. You trolled me to my face. This is what happens.
Yeah. It's one of the best heckling moments I've ever seen. You
were just, yeah, no, it felt good. Yeah, oh, yeah. I was so pumped to go back on stage. The crowd went nuts, too. They couldn't believe I was back up there.
Yeah. You launched your podcast, Steph Infection, last year. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, I always have something wrong with me.
I'm covered in hives, just so you know, in case. Yeah, I know. Something's wrong. I'm very sick. This is the last show I'm ever doing. So if I leave quickly, it's because I need a hospital. I must... But I will be doing the act outs in the back of the ambulance, just like, hey, where are you guys from? So trying to put my IV in.
I've always had a rash. I always have hives. I have a weird cyst that I have to get removed. My mole's bitten off. Like, there's always like a bizarre body issue that happens with me. So I thought, what better way to talk about these things? And it's really messed up because there's something I have. I actually have it right now where I get like blisters all over my hands and they like pus up and they bleed. I know what it is now because other people on my doctors couldn't tell me what it was, but other people on my podcast have it and they know what it was. So now I'm diagnosed from people telling me what it is on my own podcast, which is crazy. It's also a good way to have like comedians come on and tell stories that they wouldn't normally tell on stage. Because I was at the point where every single comedy podcast I was doing, we were having the same conversations. I was like, yeah, I started in Toronto. Yes, I did this. I'm like, I can't talk about this anymore. I don't want to talk about it anymore. So I was like, I want to find something comedians can talk about that they haven't talked about.
Mm.
Where they can be super open and gross and just say whatever. I do comedians, porn stars, actors. The porn stars are the best episodes. If you're looking to start my podcast, they are fearless.
Good to know, much like yourself. So was there one particular fellow comedian that you interviewed on your podcast that grossed you out, that his or her bodily ailment was so gross?
Yes, actually, Josh Potter recently, he has really crazy eye problems. Like he's going blind both eyes, and he told me some stories about his eye surgery that it's the first time I almost fainted during the podcast.
And then it becomes painful.
What the heck?
Like, it won't keep its shape anymore. It just becomes like, you know, like a grape that gets like old or whatever.
Oh, God.
It's like...
I'm never going to sleep again. Ooh, this is the hardest episode I've ever had. Okay. Okay. Oh,
can
my
you
God.
Even do contact? I can't do contact.
No, I can't. I'm like...
I can't. I don't want to touch that.
I can't touch my eyeball. I'm like, eyeballs are my thing. And I'm like, okay. I've never been more faint in my life. Okay. I did not know your eyeball could...
Like, I had to just tell him to stop for a second because I was like, because I don't love I don't watch Dr. Pimple Popper or like, I can't watch surgeries. I'm not that gross. I'm just more interested in like stranger body stuff that we don't talk about. But for some reason, when it comes to the eyeballs, I can't stomach it.
Totally understandable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't handle Dr. Pimple Popper. My wife sometimes watches it. I can't handle that. It's super gross. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm curious about what is next for Steph Tolev. Is there a Filthier Queen tour in your future?
I am working on a Filth Queen special, and it should be filming this year, and it should be airing early next year.
Okay. We'll look forward to that. Yes. Anything else you've got in the works, like a TV show, movie,
yeah,
a book?
I'm working on no book yet. I don't think I'm at book level yet. Yeah, but I'm working on a TV show with Allison in Canada, and I'm really It's for the producers of Letterkenny. So I'm really hoping that it gets picked up and going, because it's me playing myself, and I get to like write exactly how I would talk. And because Alice and I are, you know, such good writers and friends, it's been the easiest writing process of my life. So I know that if it gets made, it'll do well.
Definitely. That probably I'm worried.
There's movies in the mix. I'm about to be on season 3 of Hacks.
Oh, we're big Hacks fans. Oh, that's great. Oh, were you in the first two seasons?
No,
in the no. Oh, okay.
But
so this
I
is
got
big.
To. It's big, and I get to play myself. They wrote me in as Steph Tolev, so it's
fantastic.
Pretty cool to play yourself on which is a TV show that I love too.
Yeah, you're kind of taking over. It's becoming Steph Tolev's world, and you're succeeding,
I would say.
Yeah.
It's working, yeah.
Yeah. Steph Tolev, thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you for being so filthy and so funny.
Thank you.
That's comedian Steph Tolev. You can catch her live tonight at the Skyline Comedy Club in Appleton, Wisconsin. Find out more about Steph and her show at wpr.org/beta.
Brad Pitt disease is a disease where the plastic figurines slowly turn to ash. So their plastic starts to transform into ash, and they almost start to not melt exactly, but more like crumble.
Scott Gill joins us in just a moment to talk about his very surreal, very funny, and very relevant debut novel, Plastic. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.